In the summer of 1910, a mild-mannered doctor and his disguised mistress boarded a ship bound for Canada, unaware they were making history. As the SS Montrose sailed across the Atlantic, Captain Henry Kendall noticed something peculiar about the father and son duo traveling as the Robinsons. The son had feminine mannerisms, while the father had recently shaved his mustache. Suspicious, Kendall composed a message and sent it crackling through the ether via his ship's wireless telegraph. Have strong suspicions that Crippen, London cellar murderer, and accomplice are amongst saloon passengers. This message, traveling invisibly through the air at the speed of light, would transform Dr. Hawley Harvey Crippen from an ordinary murderer into the first criminal caught by wireless technology. For the first time in human history, a fugitive couldn't simply disappear across an ocean. The world had suddenly become smaller, more connected, and infinitely more difficult to hide in. What makes this story so compelling isn't just the gruesome murder that triggered the manhunt, but how it intersected with one of humanity's greatest technological leaps, wireless communication. The pursuit of Crippen became a global sensation precisely because it demonstrated how dramatically science was reshaping society. In that moment, criminals everywhere realized with horror that the very air around them could be quivering with accusatory messages. In 1894, 20-year-old Guglielmo Marconi envisioned sending messages through air across vast distances, a feat experts deemed impossible. While scientists believed electromagnetic waves couldn't travel beyond half a mile, Marconi's lack of formal training freed him from such theoretical constraints. His mother Annie arranged tutors who fostered his passion for physics. Though academically challenged, Marconi possessed extraordinary gifts, including perfect pitch and sight-reading abilities that revealed his exceptional spatial intelligence. His breakthrough came in his Villa Griffone attic laboratory. In September 1895, his transmitted signal triggered his brother Alfonso's responding gunshot from beyond Celestine Hill, proving wireless signals could travel beyond sight, over hills, and through obstacles, revolutionizing human communication. Dr. Hawley Harvey Crippen and his wife Belle Elmore projected respectability in Edwardian London. The mild-mannered, bespectacled doctor had met the vivacious Cora Turner, later Belle Elmore, in his Brooklyn office when she was 17. Their marriage crumbled after moving to London in 1900. While Belle pursued theater, Crippen struggled financially. She dominated their home, reducing him to a servant, tending to boarders and performing chores even on his days off. She controlled his wardrobe and kept a former lover's photograph as leverage. To neighbors at Hilldrop Crescent, they appeared content. Yet close friends knew better. They rarely spoke and slept separately. Belle collected pets to combat loneliness, while Crippen endured her volatile temper. Crippen found solace with his secretary, Ethel LaNeve, a young woman with large gray eyes. Their relationship deepened after he collapsed following one of Belle's tirades. By 1904, they had become lovers, with Ethel discovering letters from Belle's paramour that validated their affair. On January 31, 1910, Belle threatened to leave Crippen at dinner, unaware he'd already promised to marry his lover, Ethel. 2 weeks earlier, Crippen had purchased hyoscine hydrobromide, enough to kill 20 men, from Lewis and Burroughs, claiming it was for homeopathic use. The morning after Belle's threat, Crippen left early, returning to find her gone. He told friends she'd returned to America, later claiming she died there of pneumonia. Ethel moved in and began wearing Belle's jewelry, including her distinctive Rising Sun brooch at a public banquet, immediately noticed by Belle's guild friends. When questioned about inconsistencies, particularly regarding Belle's supposed cremation, Crippen's story crumbled. Unable to provide proof of death, his deception prompted friends to contact Scotland Yard on June 30. His fatal mistake was giving Belle's recognizable jewelry to Ethel, an act of hubris that exposed his calculated crime. Chief Inspector Walter Dew, nicknamed Blue Surge for his impeccable dress and a veteran of the Jack the Ripper investigation, took charge of Bell's case. On July 8, 1910, Dew and Sergeant Mitchell visited 39 Hilldrop Crescent, finding Ethel Leneve wearing Bell's brooch. At Crippen's office, they encountered a small, bespectacled man with protruding blue eyes who maintained an unsettling cheerfulness. Though Crippen admitted lying about his previous stories, he insisted Bell had simply left him. Dew searched the house with permission, finding Bell's wardrobe and the coal cellar seemingly untouched. After the detectives left, Ethel confronted Crippen about his deceptions. He claimed ignorance of Bell's whereabouts, but admitted fabricating her death to avoid scandal. When pressed about his plans, he responded ominously, "My dear, there seems to me only one thing possible to do." The next day, both vanished. Upon returning to search again, Dew discovered decomposing human remains beneath loose bricks in the cellar. Tissue without bones, limbs, head, or genitalia. The manhunt began. On July 20, 1910, Crippen and Ethel boarded the SS Montrose in Antwerp as John Philo Robinson and his 16-year-old son. Ethel disguised herself in boy's clothing while Crippen shaved his mustache. Captain Henry Kendall grew suspicious during his cabin search, noting a Brussels hat, the son's feminine mannerisms, and ill-fitting boy's clothes held by safety pins. The spectacle marks on the father's nose particularly drew his attention. 3 days into the voyage, Kendall made history with a wireless message. "Have strong suspicions that Crippen, London cellar murderer, and accomplice are amongst saloon passengers." After Scotland Yard received the transmission, Chief Inspector Dew pursued on the faster Laurentic. As newspapers tracked both ships, Crippen and Leneve remained oblivious, even as Crippen praised the ship's antenna as a wonderful invention. In the St. Lawrence River, Dew boarded in disguise. Upon revealing himself to Crippen with, "Good morning, Dr. Crippen," he received a calm reply, "Good morning, Mr. Dew." Crippen's trial drew massive interest, with 4,000 seeking Old Bailey tickets. Pathologist Bernard Spilsbury's testimony proved decisive, identifying surgical scars matching Bell's history, while lab tests confirmed hyoscine poison. The jury convicted Crippen in 27 minutes, but acquitted Ethel as unwitting. Crippen maintained innocence until his hanging at Pentonville Prison in November 1910. Ethel fled to Canada, later returning to London during World War I, where she married and lived anonymously. The chase's wireless coverage boosted demand for shipboard radio, though the Titanic disaster proved more influential. After the sinking, England's Postmaster General credited Marconi's invention with saving hundreds of lives. At Marconi's death in 1937, wireless operators worldwide observed 2 minutes of radio silence, the last time the airwaves fell completely quiet. The convergence of Marconi's invention and Crippen's capture marked when criminals could no longer simply vanish across oceans. The world had become smaller and more connected, a transformation that continues through today's digital surveillance. As we trade privacy for convenience, what secrets can we still keep in an increasingly transparent world?